Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Welcome to this episode of Thriving Not Surviving. I'm really pleased today to be joined by my guest, Doug Gordon. But just before we start, remember that you can find me on a whole range of platforms, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and more recently on Patreon. More of that later. Now, I met Doug a couple of weeks ago, and I was very, very thrilled to be a guest on his show. And we started talking, and I heard about his story and thought he'd be a great guest for our show. So, as you know, I don't like to miss anything out, so I'm going to read his bio to you. It's very, very interesting. Doug Gordon is CEO of DNS Performance Optimization, a coaching, consulting, and corporate training company. He's also the Global Goodwill Ambassador for Dublin. He speaks professionally all over the world alongside ex-prime ministers, film stars, TV celebrities, New York Times best-selling authors, renowned CEOs and sports stars. His Dublin show is called Inspirational People, Inspirational Stories, and I was really thrilled to be one of his guests on there, as I said. Now, Doug's had a real life change. He was a very successful person in the investment world and for 21 years sold hedge and mutual funds, business to business, to global banks and fund managers. And his sales area grew from $50 million per annum to $1.75 billion in a year. And it took him 6 years to do that, but that's just amazing. But between 2008 and 2012, Doug went through major stress, two operations that went wrong, and then a near-death experience. He's since healed himself completely by using wellness techniques and is now passionate about helping others. Since then, Doug has been helping people deliver high-performance success without stress, focusing on top executives and sports people, helping them with accelerated business growth, mastery, presentation skills, lifestyle architecture, well-being, and performance optimization. My goodness me, that is quite a bio. Thank you very, very much for joining us. I'm just going to change the gallery view. There we go. So, Doug, tell us your story. It's a fascinating one.
Gina, first, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on the show, and thank you so much for coming on my show a few weeks ago. The feedback has been phenomenal, and we had a really good listenership of people on there as well. So yeah, so I was in the hedge and mutual fund world, selling mutual funds to financial advisors, stockbrokers, global bankers, and many others for 21 years. And it was a really good time, really enjoyed it, kind of worked my way up from kind of, you know, customer services all the way up to board director and head of sales and marketing for one of the biggest asset managers in Ireland and in England. And in 2008, obviously the markets hit, and we all, you know, obviously remember that. And I had some pretty tough times, and we lost a lot of money within our company. And at that point, I got very stressed. We were literally having people, you know, losing their jobs, walking out the door, carrying boxes. And when these people mean something to you, it actually affects you quite badly. And I got affected. And by the end of 2009, I'd literally gone to, you know, I'd had ailment after ailment. I'd seen specialist after specialist, doctor after doctor. And ended up needing two operations that unfortunately didn't go so well at the end of 2009. That then led to lots of pain and in the abdomen. And that led to me waking up sometimes 10 times in the night and being in meetings where I had to excuse myself to go and rub my stomach and try and sort myself out in whatever way I could. And it just got really, really bad. And that led to the anxiety and stress, led to depression. And I was in a right state, a really, really bad state. And it was funny, actually, my record year when I did 1.75 billion in sales was the same year I had my near-death experience. And I think it was because I was so humble, because I actually didn't know whether I was going to be around for much longer, that I just found myself doing so well, because all my interest was in other people rather than trying to be successful myself. And then at the end of September 2012, I got something called the norovirus, which is like a stomach bomb. And after 10 days of serious dehydration, I won't go into the details because it's not really appropriate, I ended up having to call an ambulance, and I was in the ambulance, and the ECG in the ambulance said heart, blood pressure doubled. Arrived into an A&E, I was absolutely in a state of fear, anxiety, and worry. I thought I was toast. And I was put on one of those trays, you know, to be rushed down to x-ray because they thought it was a blockage in the stomach. And on the way down to x-ray, suddenly all the fear and the anxiety and everything just went away. And I was encapsulated in this amazing feeling of love, energy, and connection. Nothing like I've ever felt before. And there was no man with a beard, but there was definitely a conscious, loving energy there. And it was incredible. And at that point, I knew I was having a near-death experience. And I kind of woke up in x-ray. And I was, you know, a bit bewildered, but at the same time I suddenly felt a lot better. And then within 4 hours I was out of the hospital and recovered quite quickly. And I had this spiritual experience, and the spiritual experience then made me lead to do something called the Alpha Course in church. And that then led into healing and spirituality. And then obviously because of the mind-body connection, the healing turned into life coaching. And then because of the 21 years in the business world, life coaching turned into business coaching. Then I was asked on a radio show and podcasts. And then I thought, I wouldn't mind my own radio show. And then ended up getting my own radio show. And then I left the corporate world in 2017 after doing a big conference called Fit CEO, which was Ireland's first strategic wellness conference. And then I went from there, really. I've spoken all over the world with some very wonderful people. And you know, just now I work with a lot of top tech companies and healthcare companies in terms of their SVP and VP level, in terms of executive coaching, and then do a lot of the talks around the world at different conferences as well. So I'd done like 8 talks in 2 weeks before the lockdown, and I had a load more. I was supposed to be talking with some really great people, and then obviously we're all on hold, so we'll see what happens.
It's an incredible story, and if I may, I'd like us to unpick some various features in that story, if I may. I mean, highly successful in your own field, and you know, a professional life that many people would dream of, because the rewards of creating a hedge fund worth 1.75 billion are going to be significant. What for you do you think was the biggest stress around that time in your life? What were the things that were stressing you? Because I'm sure that's going to have resonance for people who are going through the current crisis.
Sure. Well, on top of obviously, you know, it was very stressful because we were losing a lot of money and everything like that. I think it was, I also had my second, well, my ex-wife had our second child, and we were going through some marital problems at the time as well. So 2 kids under the age of 3, plus then the 08 fall in markets. I think I've been very left brain in the past, and that would be make me very analytical and try and analyze everything. So when people were like losing their jobs, even though I was the number one performer in the team, I still worried. I had fear, and ego was something that came in. I don't mean ego as big-headedness. I mean ego as in fearfulness. Mm-hmm. And that fearfulness really got to me. And I was concerned I was going to lose my job. And because I was one of the top performers in the company, there was a lot of pressure on me from other people around, you know, expecting me to deliver. And, you know, also when you live to a certain standard and you're used to that standard, and then suddenly bonuses get slashed, it kind of gets you. And everybody was like, I think, I don't know how much, we must have laid off about 30 or 40% of the staff during the 08, 09 kind of period. And everybody, even the top people, were concerned.
Yeah.
And that just really got to me. And, you know, I ended up suffering from everything from neck pain to back pain to digestive issues to everything. not sleeping well, anxiety. It got so bad at one stage, I was even getting off the train at London Bridge and then walking across London Bridge, I would have to have, you know, some water in one hand and mints in another because the anxiety was so bad. I sometimes thought I was having a heart issue. And yet I was playing Premier League hockey and was fit as a fiddle. But it was all up here. And that was the problem. You know, your mind plays tricks on you and tells you, and your ego tells you, you know, you're not good enough and you need to worry and you need to be fearful. And, you know, it tells you that your boss doesn't like you and your wife is nagging you and all that kind of stuff. And actually, a lot of the time, none of them are really doing that. It's just your own inner self, because you're not happy with yourself and you don't feel true love for yourself. Everything else seems to just escalate around you. And that was the real problem.
I think that's a really important point for people to take on. Well, there's several, but the two I think I'd like to highlight is that fear can generate such thoughts that are perceptions. There's no more reality to them than there is to a film on the screen. And yet they become our reality, don't they? And they build. And the problem with fear is that it layers upon itself. So once you're anxious, then you become more anxious about what's going on. And the reality of the situation gets harder and harder to identify, doesn't it?
100%. 100%. And, you know, you and I have had some chats offline, and I think this COVID-19 has caused a lot of fear within people. And one of the biggest things, which is hard for people at the moment, is, you know, when you're stuck at home in close quarters with very, you know, lovely loved ones, sometimes it can get a little bit scratchy and edgy at times. And again, because you're not out working, you're not out giving to other people, you're not out doing your usual kind of stuff, sometimes you can feel a bit kind of like, you know, what's life all about?
Yeah.
And that can cause issues as well. And then that becomes a self-love issue. Yeah. And I think the biggest problem with relationships is when you're in close quarters and when you haven't got self-love for yourself, and then your partner is mirroring back the very things that you need to work on yourself, that can cause issues. And I think a lot of people have experienced that over the last 7 weeks.
I think that's very true. And that was going to be my second point, really, is that having love for oneself, and I'm not talking about pink fluffy love where you're overindulgent, but actually loving who you are, wobbly bits and all, and recognizing that you are flawed, but at the same time appreciating who you are and all the good bits. That's the basis of every relationship, isn't it? You know, every relationship is a reflection of the relationship you have with you. So to go back to the near-death experience and the profound impact that had on your life, could you talk us through, I mean, was it an instantaneous thing, or was it then just an awakening that you then worked on? How did that operate for you in terms of your consciousness around the quality of your life and how you were living it?
Yeah, it's interesting, Gina, because I reckon, even like I say, 08 was when the kind of like the thing really exasperated, but actually, you know, I was having a few digestive issues beforehand through stress. And I certainly believe that when you're doing your true heart's desire or your true mission in life, you generally have a perfectly working body in all forms or whatever. But when you're doing something that might be just because of money, and that was what I was doing, at times it can affect you. Now, don't get me wrong. I loved being out and being with people and trying to add value to people's lives as a salesperson. But at the same time, a lot of it was all about just bringing in money from other sources into your own business. And I was very good at it, but I was good at it because I was good with people. And the stress then became more exasperated when I realized, actually, why was I doing this? What meaning did it have to my life? What did I love about my job? What do I love about myself? And what I loved most was people. And what I loved most was trying to add value to people's lives. And I found a lot of my meetings would be 50% business, but 50% just genuinely trying to get to know them and try and help them. And they were very open with their issues and everything like that. And I developed very long-term relationships with these people, hence then developing a lot of business because they trust you. But it got to the stage where I was more interested in helping them than actually just bringing in the numbers. And I think with 08, then when that kind of exasperated, I kind of thought to myself, what is this all about? And then my issues got worse and worse and worse because of the stress obviously brings out a lot of these issues. And it just got worse. And what I think when you're aligned with your true self and your true mission in life, it's perfect health. And actually, once what happened was even after the near death experience, I think what happened was there was issues in terms of digestive stuff for quite some time, but I was ignoring it all the time and just getting on with life. Then it was almost like the universe went, hello, let's give him a wake up call, smack kind of thing around the head, near death experience. And even then, Gina, for a few weeks, I wasn't sure. I went and did this alpha course. I wasn't sure if I was going to continue doing the alpha course. And I asked the universe for a sign whether I should do it. I ended up going running, tripped up while running, cut my hand, and ended up having INRI in cuts in my hand and two infinity signs either side of it. And at that point, I thought, well, okay, that is a sign. I better go back and do this course. And gradually, as I got more and more into spirituality and then healing and meditation in particular, I connected more and more with my own true self. And that was when all the ailments went away. And I'd say pre-2013, I was probably going to the doctor once every week, almost, maybe once every 2 weeks. Since 2013, and since I've started doing healing and meditation, I think I've been 3 times in the last 7 years. So that really shows the power of...
It's dark, isn't it? The comparison between the two.
Yeah. Oh, it's phenomenal. And it's always, if ever something's going wrong in my body now, I have to check in myself. Okay, when was the last time I meditated? Have I been doing other things I do? Have I been doing my gratitude statements in terms of being grateful for what I have? Because
yeah.
I find if you're grateful for what you have, you open yourself up to receive more.
Yeah.
And am I doing enough exercise? Am I eating correctly in terms of my diet? And when I analyze them very quickly, I go, actually, no, there's an area of my life that hasn't been. And once I correct that very quickly, whatever it is gone. So you can self-medicate yourself through those processes.
That's really powerful. And ultimately, I think people have this skewed idea of loving oneself being rather narcissistic. But I would suggest it's anything but. If you truly love yourself, you are going to want the best for yourself. And in doing that, you are better placed to be of service to other people.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
So let's fast forward now to you've come to the realization and that you've started to live your life differently.
Mm-hmm.
Many people would be facing the dilemma of I'm in corporate world or I'm in the business world and it doesn't give me a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment, but I want to do something else. How did you make the transition? What are the things that you would give people as pointers to help them make that transition from being in a professional world that they're not getting enough out of in terms of fulfillment, even though they may be financially, or maybe they're not financially, but they still want to transition?
Yeah, so one of the things that I wrote down, I analyzed what are my skill sets, what am I good at, you know, in terms of people, in terms of presentation skills. What am I good at? So firstly, you write down on a piece of paper, who am I? You know, what do I represent? What am I good at? What do I want for me and what do I want for the world? Because I think it's very important is to find something that you are passionate about and you really love doing and try and make sure that it adds value to other people in some way or form. And then see if you can go and make money out of it. And that might be various different things. I mean, you know, people become multimillionaires out of being a good cook, you know, or being able to make jewelry out of nothing. You know, it's really down to what your passion is and what you love doing, and then go and do it. And if you can make money out of it, it's brilliant. And if you can't, do it as a hobby anyway.
Yeah.
Because I think people get wrapped up in this world of busy, 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 must make money, must do this, must do that. And it's like you're on the rat race and before you know it, you're 75 years of age and it's all over.
Yeah.
And you don't want that. You need to, I think what I would say to people is if you are in a state of not knowing you're in the right job and you need to find what that is stop, reflect, realign yourself and spend some time just with yourself. Try and maybe, even if you've got a family, just say to your wife or your husband, look, I just need 2 days, and go away and leave the phone somewhere and just take a pad and paper and do a lot of reflection, meditation, and keep asking yourself, what do I want out of life? What can I do out of life? And I, the other exercise I've done in the past is I've written down all the things that I enjoy doing and all those things next to them about what you could possibly do with them, you know, in order to make money or add value to people's lives. And look, I was doing presenting for years, so I loved getting on stage and trying to, you know, sell something. Now I'm selling concepts to help people, basically, tips and tools. And, you know, in terms of transition, I think the other thing to remember is, you know, when I was in the corporate world, I had a secretary, I had sales support staff, I had marketing staff all working for me. And it was very easy. And when you go out there, it's not easy. You know, you're on your own. So I was very lucky and very grateful that, you know, because I'd done well in the hedge fund world, I had a bit of cash behind me. And if you do, I would highly suggest getting outsourcing to other people the stuff that you don't like doing. Like I have a bookkeeper, I have an assistant, I have obviously an accountant. You know, outsource all that stuff as much as possible. Because realize as well, have the intention of realization that, you know, work out what your hourly rate is and how much someone who can do that for you is. So for example, I have a cleaner. She costs 15 quid an hour. My time is multiples of that. So I don't consider that like, oh, I'm spending money at the start on a cleaner just because you haven't got money rolling in. Think big and think with the intention of you being successful. And I think the intention of what you're trying to do is very, very important as well. A friend of mine was telling me yesterday, she's a bit lonely at home, and she sent herself some flowers. And, you know, this is a while back now during the COVID-19. And then out of the blue, this man she'd never met before sent her flowers. But the intention she had of sending her own flowers sent that intention out to the universe as such. And then that happened. So send the intention out to the universe that you're going to be successful. Act like you want to in the energy that you want to actually be. And that would be my biggest, and it takes time. You know, it's a lot of work. People say, you know, you can visualize these things, which I do. You can write all your goals down, which is incredibly important. You can set out a business plan, which is incredibly important. You can client map, which is incredibly important. And your activity plan, which is incredibly important as well. But at the end of the day, you need to get up and set a routine of discipline and hard work as well. And action produces results.
I think that's very true and really powerful, because many people, you know, they've watched The Secret and they think, you know, I want a Porsche and it should arrive on their doorstep. When I think, you know, it's really important to set the intention. Strangely enough, that's what my post on LinkedIn was all about today, which is visualizing the what you would like to be in your life and why that's important, and really getting in touch with the feeling that that engenders, because it's rarely about the thing, it's what that thing gives you that's the important thing, isn't it?
100%, yeah.
I'm really interested that you're an ambassador for Ireland. Talk to us about that, if you will.
Well, there was a senator in America that set up something called the Global Goodwill Ambassadors, and it's for people who do things to help others without looking for anything behind it. So when I became a healer back in 2013, I was still working, obviously, in the investment management industry. And I used to have a lot of people come around in evenings and weekends. And it started off just doing friends and family and end up doing professional footballers and rugby players and international stars. I had some amazing kind of miracle healing stuff. Like people who were supposed to be out of injury who were international rugby players out for, you know, kind of 6 weeks. I did a healing and they were back the following week. Anyway, what was I saying? Sorry, I've lost track of myself. Sorry, repeat the question again.
I was asking you about being the ambassador, and you were saying it was.
Oh, yeah. So, sorry. Yeah. So, when I first started, I was back in 2013 to 2017. I was still working, end of 2017. I was still working in the investment management industry, so still earning money. So, every single bit of money I got from my healings or life coachings, whatever, I gave to either the homeless or some kind of charity. And a friend of mine who was a radio presenter found that out. And I actually did a healing on him, and he said, right, here's the 50 or 100 quid, whatever it is. And I said, no, well, what charity do you support the most? And he said, XYZ. I said, look, just please go and give it to them and make sure you send me a receipt kind of thing that you've done it. And he did, and that happened a few times, and the reputation got round. And then he recommended me to this organization, and they did some, you know, investigation, checking it was all valid, and sure enough it was. And I used to, when I was working at an investment management company here in Ireland, I used to actually run a kind of a positive thinking and meditation classes after work on a Monday. And we used to get sometimes 5 people, or we get 60 people, and they'd have to pay a fiver each. And again, all the money went to charity. So so after that, I think, you know, the word got around, and they very kindly gave me this award. I don't know what it means, but I get a lot of other wonderful people in the global goodwill ambassador world connecting with me, and it's a bit of a support network. So yeah,
sounds brilliant. So who do you work with, and how can people get in touch with you? Because we're almost at the end of the show, and I don't want to miss that out.
Yeah, so I work with, so for example, one of the biggest tech firms in the world. They'd have like over 137,000 people worldwide. They're very big presence in Ireland and the UK. And I work on their SVP and VP level, and I've actually worked with their president as well here in Ireland. I have another tech company as well. If you look at my LinkedIn, there's about 42 different recommendations there. Some of them quite famous people who I've helped. Some of them I've been on stage with and worked with. I've worked, actually, you talked about the Secret film earlier on. I've been on stage with Lisa Nichols. I've been on stage with Dr. John DeMartini, and I've had Jack Canfield on my radio show as well. So yeah, it's been a wonderful time over the last 2 years. And my aim in life is to help people get the highest performance with the least amount of stress. And I've had some great success on that. So yeah, I can help anybody. The focus generally is with corporates, but also with sports people. And have a look at my LinkedIn. You can see me under Doug Gordon. And you'll see all the people I've worked with, or some of them anyway.
Brilliant. And we'll make sure that all of the of your links are in the show notes. So if you'd like to get in touch with Doug, then we'll make sure that those are in the show notes, and that you can do that. Doug, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining me today. An amazing story, and lots of lessons in there for people who don't need to go through a near-death experience to actually take the learning from what you're offering. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Don't go away, folks. We've got a short break. We'll just say a final goodbye to Doug, and then I'll see you in a moment. So, Doug, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you, Jean.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no. Well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com, or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
Hello, and welcome back to the second part of BBS Radio. As usual, the second part of the show is a conversation between myself and my good friend, Rachel Davidson. Both of us are authors, number one, international best-selling authors, but with very different sorts of books. Mine are all around business and self-help. Rachel's the creative one, and she has the most amazing trilogy of books called Beyond the Veil. So go and check it out. Hi, Rachel. Really pleased to see you here.
Hey, Gina.
Today, we're going to be talking about the whole business of aging. In its biggest sense, because from the moment we're conceived, we are effectively aging, we're changing. And yet, in Western society particularly, there's such a stigma and a negative connotation about the word aging, isn't there?
Yeah, we live in a very youth-obsessed society, definitely in the West, yeah.
And yet, there are certain things like certain cheeses and certain wines where age is seen as a huge advantage, that actually that there comes with that a complexity of flavour and a real depth. And I would like to put forward the view that as we age, just like a fine wine or a fine cheese, that our experiences layer upon layer upon layer give us great depth and experience. And it seems to me it's time that we owned that.
Definitely. I mean, you know, the whole point of existing on the planet is to, apart from the biological aspects of just maintaining the human race, possibly, but it is to acquire wisdom and knowledge. And there are many wise young people in the world, for sure, but often wisdom and knowledge take a matter of time to develop and a number of experiences, and that just literally is something that has to take time to do. You don't just achieve great wisdom with a click of the finger. It has to be worked at. So age in my head is simply that. It's not that I think there are, that if you're below a certain birthday number, you have no value or opinion. It's just that the likelihood of you acquiring a similar level of experience and knowledge around what it means to live a good life, how to approach particular problems, so on and so forth, it is less likely. So, yeah. But I know plenty of old people who, frankly, are just as silly as the five-year-olds.
I was going to say that one of the things that strikes me is I've met, you know, seven-year-olds who have the wisdom of eons, and I've met octogenarians who, without having gone into a second childhood because of dementia, are still very, very silly.
So it's not really an age thing, actually.
No, I think it's how we experience life. You know, I'm struck by, there is much we can learn from very small children. You know, they have an awe and wonder about the world, a curiosity about the world, that if we were able to maintain that throughout our lives, I think our lives would be hugely enriched. Mm. In the same way, I think there is a huge difference between being childlike and childish. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think that as we go through life, we are students, aren't we, throughout our life, if we choose to be. But there are some people who have Groundhog Day. You know, they're living the same experience day by day, over and over again, and they don't actually learn from it. Mm. How many people do you know who've had one disastrous relationship after another, for example, but the relationship has followed exactly the same pattern? Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really is down to an attitude problem. And you can find, 15-year-olds who are very fixed in their mindsets around what their capabilities are, what their belief systems are. And you can find 15-year-olds who have a very positive growth mindset in terms of their trust in their ability to learn and adapt and curiosity for the world. And that template applies to every single age. And obviously the subjects and priorities that we hold should do change as you get older and you move through different life stages. But fundamentally that mindset, that attitude, so which often we talk about as maturity or age, or you know, that sort of sense of acquiring wisdom, it is just simply down to whether you have a fixed mindset or whether you have a growth mindset.
I think that's incredibly true. You know, one of the other things I think about age is that many people fear getting old because they feel that they will lose functionality. Mm. And I think, you know, one of the things that strikes me is that there are many examples of people who are living into their 90s and they are fit and well and they are mentally alert and they still love life. A huge example, actually, reached 100 would be Captain Tom. And for those of you that are not in the UK, this is an ex-soldier who during lockdown decided that he was going to do something for the NHS. He reached his 100th birthday during lockdown and has become a phenomena. He expected to raise, I think it was £100 or a couple of £100s, and ended up raising over 30 million. And he's become a celebrity. He's over 100. He's completely there with his cough drops. I mean, he's as sharp as a knife in terms of his mental acuity. And he is a guy who's lived his life and lived a good life, really through service, thinking about other people and looking at how he can make a difference in a small way, and as it happens, around his 100th birthday in a monumental way. But I think one of the things that strikes me is if you want to be healthy as you go grow older, you have to start thinking about that when you're much younger and look after yourself physically. You know, there are so many diseases now that older people are suffering from, high blood pressure, heart problems, overweight, diabetes, a whole range of things which could be certainly avoided or minimized if people ate sensibly and looked after themselves sensibly. And it just strikes me that, you know, we are living longer, but ultimately more and more people are living sicker. And it makes sense, doesn't it, to take control of your life and to do everything you can to stay fit, to eat well, to hydrate, to get exercise, to sleep well, to, you know, at a physical level, really take charge. But at the same time, to be curious, to keep learning, to keep those grey cells firing on all cylinders, and to keep emotionally and spiritually well by making a real, I was going to say effort, but it doesn't need to be effortful, but to be conscious about how you fill your time. Are you constantly listening to negative things on the news or complaining? And do you spend time with other people who laugh and who are curious and interested in the world and have great conversations?
I mean, it is true that the absolute reality is that physical aspects of life will break down. There is a time limit. But your quality of your time limit, I've said it a lot actually in recent weeks, that none of us get out of this life alive.
No, we don't.
And holding some kind of ideology that is against that where you, the only logical conclusion of some people's behaviour is that they think they will get out of this life alive, it is the definition of insanity. And nobody can stop the body beginning to age. It's a natural process. There is a very definite biological reason why we're not having babies at 100 years old. And it's part, I think, of the spiritual journey is to be separate, put into packages that appear separate, our bodies, to learn, to understand that, to have the physical feelings, and then also to learn how to cope with the removal of physicality as well. I think that's why physicality on this planet ages. It's about a lesson in that your attitude and your mindset, your beliefs and your values are what need to be focused on rather than just the physicality. And we all go through that phase of being young and youthful and being a little bit body obsessed. I don't think there's a person on the planet who, I mean, it's a classic teenage thing, isn't it, where everybody gets very self-conscious about their physicality and often very judgmental. And this is why we have a lot of rhetoric in our society around you know, the pressures put on people by the media, the photoshopping and all this sort of stuff. It's kind of natural that you go through that. I think even if we didn't have magazines and media, I think if we were still cavemen, I think there'd still be a phase in our lives where we all felt a little bit self-conscious about our actual physicality. And I think that's part of the spiritual process. And really it comes down to, you know, cliches, because they're true, that age is just a number, and actually really what keeps you present and valuable is your attitude towards life. But none of us is getting out of it alive. You have to accept the aging process. You don't have to accept all aspects of it. You don't have to just say, oh well, that's it then, I've reached a particular number, my life is over and there's no point. Again, but that's a mindset. You know, the reality is that the physicality would probably follow that. If your mindset was, oh, I've reached a particular age and my life is only just beginning and I've got a load more freedom to do lots of interesting things, then again, your physicality is probably going to follow that manifestation too.
And I think, you know, if I look back to when I was small, you know, people at the age of 60, I mean, older people always seem older to very small people, but 60 people were old, that they when they retired from work, it was often quite physical work, that they were old and worn out for many. Now you see so many people in their 60s, for example, who look amazing, who are capable of doing amazing things, whether that's physically, mentally or spiritually. And I think, you know, part of what I'd like to get across to you as a listener is, don't be defined by the number of your birthdays. You know, lots of people spend much of their life worrying about what other people will think and doing things because they've been conditioned to think that those are the right things to do, even though it doesn't make their heart sing and it gives them no joy. And I think one of the things that getting older does, if you choose to allow it to, is it gives you the freedom to be you and to say, I don't have to please other people. It doesn't mean you go out of your way to not please them, but it's time to own the fact that you can choose, actively choose how you want to be, how you want to live, and go out there and get it. And know that if you are in your 60s and you've looked after yourself, then you've got many years still to come, and that you want to make those years count. You know, they're not just sitting watching telly, and you may enjoy being a lady what lunches, or and I'm being very stereotypical here, or a man who goes and plays golf, or the other way around. But actually, there's more to life. And I think many people are, with late 50s onwards, are searching for a sense of purpose. And it's my belief that that often comes from doing something that will make a positive difference to yourself and to others.
I think also there's the potential that when they say they're searching for a purpose, it's that they're actually trying to avoid the inevitable, that they're still in denial about this life ending in death. And that's an entirely natural feeling to have, because obviously as you get closer and closer and there's more life behind you than there is in front of you, then to accept that transition is a critical aspect of of the reality of what we are and who this planet is and so on and so forth. So I do think that there's a lot of people chasing purpose as a way of distracting themselves from possibly the work that they need to do to come to an acceptance of the inevitable.
I think that may be true, and but also I think that they may be using a sense of purpose to avoid doing the inner work on owning who they are. You know, it's my view that it's not about quantity of life. You know, I personally don't want life on any terms. I want to be aware and able to enjoy it. And this comes from somebody who was started to be a wheelchair user at the age of 29. Mm. So it's not about being able to climb Kilimanjaro or dance a salsa. Mm. It's about, can you create a quality of life? And I've known plenty of people who've been very significantly limited in a physical way, who have had an incredible quality of life, because it's what they have made it and how they've approached their life. Mm. I think that makes the difference. Mm. And you know, one of the reasons that I wanted to bring this up is I'm absolutely of the view that you have no idea what the future is going to bring. The only thing that you have is now. Mm. And to make the most of now, to make the most of every minute, it's precious. You know, my brother dropped dead at the age of 49. Mm. He didn't know when he went out to take that cycle race on that day that his life on this earth was going to be at an end.
Yeah.
But one of the things I learned from my brother is he wrung life dry. He lived every moment fully. And so when he died, it was incredibly sad. Mm. But he'd not wasted a moment of his life. And if you can look back and think, I haven't wasted my time. I have really looked and made the most of that, the difficult moments and the good moments, because I've learned from the difficult moments that if nothing else, I've learned that I'm strong enough to survive those. Mm. And for me, I think that if you can live a life that where you, that you recognize that every word that you speak or not, every action you take or not, leaves a living legacy. And so it is about how are you going to live your life so that you leave the most positive legacy possible, rather than viewing I'm going to leave a legacy when I die and people are going to inherit whatever, you know, the China cat or the money in the bank. You know, make your time count in a positive way for yourself and for others.
Mm, yeah.
So we're coming to the end of our show today. Love to know what you think. Love to know how you are approaching life, whatever stage of life you're at. Please do contact us. And you can find lots of information at the Genuinely You site. That's genuinely-you.com. Or if you're interested in leadership, enlightenedleadership.com, or to find out more about coaching, it's ginagardner.com. All our books are on Amazon and on my website. Rachel, it's a trilogy called
The Trilogy Beyond Fails. The three books in it are the hope. Sorry, I started from the end. The three books in it are the first book, The Point of Me, second book, The Truth of Her, and the third book, The Hope of Us.
And you'll find Thriving Not Surviving, The Five Secret Pathways to Happiness, Success and Fulfillment, and lots of other books from me on the website or on Amazon. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care and see you next time. Bye-bye now.